You're listening to a chapel service recorded at Asbury Theological Seminary in Wilmore, Kentucky. For more information, visit asburyseminary.edu.
This is an illustration of an equipping issue. In small groups, most people in the West, they start small groups and you have a very high level of leadership, usually ability. There are people who have been Sunday school teachers and church leaders. And so you equip them. We equipped our first leaders in a 6-month training course. But then you get to your first multiplication and you have a little less quality to draw from for your leaders. You get to the second multiplication and you assume, because they're down here now, that you don't have qualified group leaders. And to me, this is an equipping issue, because the faster and faster you reproduce things, the more and more you're going to have to change the ways in which you equip people. And so instead of keeping your standards and your equipping methods way up here, it's actually more the new believers. The more you multiply, the more you have to equip people that are brand new believers. They're about at this level. Some of our best small group leaders are brand new believers. They still have all the contacts. It doesn't mean they're thrown out there alone, but we're equipping them in the process of doing the group. We stay close and equip them on site. There's lots of issues that are changing in leadership development today, but it's going to be, and already is, much more on site and in the context of ministry. And so these mentoring and apprenticeship relationships are critical. But if you want reproduction, you have to change the way that you look at the equipping process and who you actually equip and when you start equipping them. So that's just a kind of a brief overview of what happens at the church on Brady. So I'll take any questions. Okay. Yeah, we can do that. Okay. Okay, is there any other questions? I know it's hot and you're at the end of a day. Okay, the four M's of Life University is message. In fact, I think that would be things like book studies, apologetics, New Testament survey, Old Testament survey, things like that. So it's about the message itself. Missions is men and movements, essentially. And so that's where you have studies of different men and movements. You have everything from evangelism to missions theory and stuff like that there. Ministry would be a specific ministry skills for the ministry that you're in, and maturity has to do with your whatever you need to grow in. So everything from intimate relationship with Christ, how to do a quiet time, to how to quit beating your wife and things like that. And the one part I think I did skip over, but is probably pretty important, is when that we're looking at equipping, them toward the specific roles that they're playing, like a parent or a Sunday school teacher or something like that. Events that are coming up and that we're equipping for. Everything from how to follow up someone to how to do advertising and publicity, how to use computers, things like that. And then their own personal destiny, what God's calling them to, and especially in the areas of head, heart, hand, and home. Okay, because we're related to Southern Baptist, do we send them out there and in what roles? Yes, a lot of ours have gone with Southern Baptist. There are some who've gone with other organizations. Many of ours are going tent making in professional roles and skills, but we always try to connect it very strategically to an unreached group. Most of our people are in the 1040 window, and we have, I think, 5 strategy coordinators from our congregation with unreached groups. Mm-hmm. Okay. Do we have our whole philosophy on tape? Probably not. I don't think so. I mean, some of us speak different places. You could get parts of it, but we've never just consolidated it all. Okay. Do we do multiple languages in worship? No, we've kept real clear that we're an English-speaking congregation, and when we need to have other languages, we start new churches for that. Mm-hmm. As we built the system, which do we build first? I would say we haven't been real sophisticated in some of that. I think we just held to the principles that we felt like everyone needs to be equipped for their work of ministry. Everyone needs to know how to do basic evangelism, edification of new believers, and the equipping of the next generation of leadership. So we just kind of put it together as we go. In 1973, when we arrived, there was only one course taught. It was by our pastor, and about 20 people took it. And it was going over the Campus Crusade basics. That's all it was. But we just gradually added courses. And now we are on 3/4 of an acre with about 50 parking places. And we're between 900 and 1,000 at the home base. And we're just not real sophisticated in that way. But it's just been put together step at a time, and I can't tell you how that's happened. I've been a part of it, but I couldn't describe it. Sorry. Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Great job. Thank you. Thank you, Carol. Tough job in the afternoon here in the sun and the birds singing, but you did a great job. And the one, she's a tremendous multiplier and mobilizer of people and has done that over these years in a wonderful way in the local church and around the world. And the one principle that's so life-changing, if you get a hold of it, and it's this, that if you're going to really mentor and develop leaders, you've got to go to where they are. If you look for people that are full grown, you'll never develop leaders. Okay? So if all they see is you up on step 10, you remember I taught you that in the last deal? I want to put a picture in your mind. If you got 10 steps, and you're the elitist, and you're doing the professional up on the 10th step, and they're down on one, they'll never get there. But most of what you do, if it's on step 2, you show them they can do it, they can get there. And those churches that are having explosive multiplication around the world have learned that principle, and it works. You know, I believe in education. You know, I'm a seminary now. But one of the embarrassing things is that some people with very little education are having multiplying churches. How do you explain that? It's because that very principle. They're going right to where the people are and taking them to that next step in their mentoring spiritually and in their ministry development. And then the next step. And so they're pouring their life in growing leaders. And when Carol talked about the missionary who worked with a 13, 14-year-old, I mean, he had that vision. Start there. And, you know, there's a place for you to start. And a question I've been asking pastors for about the last year is, do you have a list of people written down you're praying for, you're working with, that you're mentoring, you're developing as leaders for the church? If you don't have, I want to see you get that. Because that's how you multiply yourself in ministry. That's how you multiply and mobilize people. Great. Well, I said enough. This is a good day. We're going to take a big tour and enjoy the grounds. And while you're walking around here, dream. This is a great place to dream. You know, if you can't dream here, you probably can't dream anywhere.
That's where he was, right up there.
If you want to walk up there and get your picture taken today, too, you can do that, all right? Just run up there and say, "This is the day," and have a good time, okay?
Yes, would you express your appreciation to Carol Davis? Just a couple of logistics. Would anyone like to claim this camera that was left back at in the Crystal Cathedral? If you would, come find me if you're missing your camera. Yes. It has a $100 bill in it. No. All right. Okay, thank you. Now, we have four or five tour guides. Four. Okay. We have four sections. Now, you're going to be on a tour for about half an hour each, and they'll start you in different places. One will start here, one will go over to the Crystal Cathedral. So, there's section one, there's section two, there's section three, there's section four. Our goal is to be all done back on the buses at 5:30, which, and that's our maximum window, and then we'll head back to campus. And at 8 o'clock in the morning is when we officially regather. If you want to go to the evening of rehearsals tonight, you're more than welcome to. Tour guides, would you come up and each stand in front of a row, and then that way, and there's one more person I'd like you to think. You know all these behind-the-scenes things that you've got it all in your church. It's somebody behind the scenes that makes the day possible. There's...
choice of moving to Ohio or finding another job. And after one trip to Ohio, I apologize if any of you are from there, but he decided to find another job. And he told God there was only one place he wouldn't go, and that was L.A. I informed him that was a dangerous prayer, but exactly what happened. We found a job only in L.A. after several months. And so we came kicking and screaming, determined to make it a very short venue, perhaps a couple of years. And within 3 months, God miraculously transplanted our heart to L.A. Like nothing we had ever experienced before. We could not explain it, but it had a lot to do with finding the church on Brady, which was fairly easy for us, but it isn't for most. But one of the gals I had been managing musically for about 13 years was singing at this church the very first night we were in town, and she had invited us. And it was actually her first concert without me playing for her. And I told her, no, thank you. And my youngest son said, I think you hurt Linda's feelings. And so my husband looked at me and said, out of the mouths of babes. And we attended. But God began to just answer longings that we'd had in our heart through the preaching and the relationships there. And you'd have to understand that in those days it was about 40, 50 people. And that was in 1973. But God brought us on, started a journey at that time that actually has been a journey that this case study that I'm going to share with you is all about. And so in your notes you have mobilizing and equipping, because I think that's one of the things that has happened at the Church on Brady. God has had an unusual hand on the congregation. Let me just explain for just a moment a little bit about the church. We're in East L.A. We're right on the edge of where East L.A., Montebello, and Monterey Park all come together. We're on the ethnic side of town, and we're very multicultural. Okay. That's all right. Great. Sorry. So anyway, it is located on the east side of town, in the ethnic side of town, and we're very multicultural. It looks very much like an international church. Today, we're approximately 50% Hispanic, about somewhere 20-25% Asian. The rest would be Middle Eastern, Anglo people like me, and a few African American, many other kinds of people from different parts of the world. And so that is where we are today. Approximately 15% of our people are either on the mission field or headed for the mission field. And we've been able, by the Lord's grace and wonderful help, to start a number of churches here in the L.A. area as well as in different places overseas. And I think you'll understand more of why and how that's happened as we process on. When the overhead comes, we'll move with that. But we consider ourselves a global local church. We are a local church, but we are a global local church. And one of the things that we've seen, I just want to share four things with you today that I think kind of summarizes and encapsulates the congregation. Basically, we've had a developing of an environment. And I cannot tell you how much the environment itself plays a role in what happens. The second thing is we've deliberately and intentionally created channels for people to go through. The other thing has been equipping centers. And we have found that mobilization and multiplication mission are all byproducts of some of the other things. But in the developing environment, one is attraction. We don't have the normal attractions that most churches have. We are on a street 3 blocks long. It's misspelled on almost every map as Bradley. It is very difficult to find. The sign that the city has on the end is behind all sorts of barricades, and so we have to tell people, count 6 blocks when you turn right on Garfield. So we say that we're a church hard to find, but we hope even harder to forget because we are really hard to find. And so we don't have those normal attraction things. We have a very run-down community, and so the houses across the street sometimes have 3 or 4 new immigrant families living in about 3 or 4 rooms and all the things that go with that. But I think our traction point and the environment that has happened is the multiculturalism. We do not reach the kind of people in the ethnic groups that we don't reach all kinds of people in ethnic groups. We simply reach the kind of people in each ethnic group that like a mix. And in a place like L.A. where we work and we go to school and we live multiculturally, this is not hard to find. And so I think that the multiculturalism is probably one of the most attracting parts of the environment. I think the other thing is just simply authentic changed lives. When I went, I was absolutely amazed because I'd been in churches all my life, and I had never heard people so open with their stories and so radical for Jesus as I began to meet and hear there. And so the people very openly bring their broken lives, and through the power of the Word and just their obedience to the Word, there is life transformation. Thanks so much. There is. Let's take just a moment, and we can begin with the overheads that might help a little bit. Maybe not. Anyway, there's a developing environment. One is the thing of attraction. It certainly isn't our location, but we feel like it's our multiculturalism and the changed lives that happen there. It is a very drawing place when a person has a need. Second thing is vision. When Tom Wolfe arrived in 1969, he was a young man, 24 years old. The church was actually ready to sell the church and just simply disband. It was a very discouraged congregation. They had most moved out from the South during the Second World War and had created a Southern-style Southern Baptist church. And one of the things that happened is as the community began to change, the congregation did not. And so it was very discouraged. But in kind of a last-ditch effort, they called a young man that was attending Fuller Seminary. This man had never pastored a church before. And he and his wife had felt called to Argentina as missionaries. But as the Lord had pressed on them after an initial visit that this is where they were to transplant their life, then they felt that the only justification was if more would go to other cities in the U.S. and around the world to do a better job than if they had gone alone. And so there was a vision from the moment that Tom Wolfe came. And when I arrived 4 years later, there were all, I would say about 95% of the people were brand new converts in the previous 4 years. And so he came with a commitment to stay. The longevity issue I cannot describe enough in terms of mobilizing your congregation and actually equipping them also. But the mobilization aspect can happen best when there's a long-term commitment, especially where there's life with that long-term commitment. But anyway, he came with a vision, and he came with a commitment to the people that he would stay through thick and thin. in order to build what needed to be built. He was very clear. He saw from the beginning that this could be a launch pad to the ends of the earth. Pastor Irwin is our new senior pastor as of 3 years ago. Tom is now our teaching pastor, and he is also the chair of the missions department for Golden Gate Seminary, but he has stayed based in the local congregation. But Pastor Irwin is also a person of tremendous vision and has carried that on. And I'd like to just share with you our mission statement so you can kind of see how that works. We began to focus and say, what is it that we need to be about? And so it was formulated this way: to glorify God by becoming a spiritual reference point in Los Angeles, and then a sending base to the ends of the earth. Pastor Irwin has shortened that to point base, and that is very clear. You can't talk to, I don't know if you could talk to many people on our campus without knowing what our purpose statement is. So it is a place of attraction and vision. This environment also includes communication at all kinds of levels. It communicates our values by who our heroes are and who is promoted and who is honored. The communication happens everywhere in terms of the vision, through the life groups, through published communication, but it's everywhere. You can't escape it. And so that communication is there. And then the other thing is what we call vibrations. And this is kind of futuristic things. We really do look to the future to kind of see what's coming our way. From about 20, 25 years ago, one of the things we recognized was the things that we were experiencing in terms of reaching people for Christ in our community and growing them into followers of Christ was that we couldn't, for instance, use a lot of the literature out because most of it had rural illustrations. And they had all Anglo faces on the covers and on all the pictures. And so it was very, very difficult for us to deal with that. But the one thing that we knew was that what we were experiencing, other churches around America would be experiencing in 20 years. And so we were always trying to look to the future to say, what is it that we need to do and become, and how do we solve these problems? There was not a lot of help in those days. And so we tried to deal with the context, the future context, mostly. But today I know that we live in a, I don't know if this overhead's going to work with everything blowing away, but we'll see. But we live in a post-literate culture. We lived in a post-literate culture back then. U.S. Department of Education tells us today that only 51% are functionally literate, 26 are barely literate, and 23 are illiterate. And I can just tell you that a large percentage of those were in our congregation. We were post-Christian. In my local church neighborhood, there are 57 languages spoken by in the homes of the high school students in the high school half a mile from our congregation. Even way back then, it was like that. We're in a post-traditional family culture. We always have been. 83% estimate is the estimate of single-parent homes in our area. This year, Madonna gave birth to a baby girl in a hospital just a few miles away. And the cry for legalized partner status in gay couples rings out daily in California. There are all kinds of things like this, and I can tell you that when we joined, our children as junior hires were the only children in our whole youth group who had both parents living at home. So we are living in a post-traditional family. We always have. We're living in a post-modern world. It's an overarching condition, and I know you know a lot about that, so I'm not going to go into that. But these are conditions that have been a part of our congregational task for many, many years now. And so this, we had to work with this developing environment. The second thing was intentionality. The intentionality was really there, and we had to create structures that would go beyond the things that were written in magazines and that kind of thing. We had to think through issues. And so globally, we went to work, and we began to find that there were some common things in churches around the world that were growing large and evangelistically particularly. And so in our growth structures, we basically just have four structures. We called it large group, little group, learning group, and linking groups. Or our celebration, our cell, our change, our consolidation. Triangle, circle, square, and diamond. And we have found that around the world, these are the four kinds of structures that are there. And so there's celebration that's primarily on Sunday. Today we have four services. Cells are our little groups. We have cells. Everyone who is part of our congregation is in a small group. Our learning groups is our what we call our life university, and I'm going to touch on that more later, but that is our learning groups. And then consolidation is our linking groups. They're service groups, our ministry groups that service the whole congregation. Let me just see if there's something else I need to show you before I go on. Okay. Let's look then at embracing change. Sorry about that. What we try to deal with is not whether a lot of people have called us an innovative church, and we've always kind of chafed under that because we've never tried to be innovative. The only thing we've tried to do is keep up and do the tasks that we've been called to. But we've always asked the question, what is it we're trying to accomplish? And we found that change has been needed because of our own inadequacies along the way, because of the times changing, because of learning styles changing, so many things. But we've changed a lot of things through the years, and the one thing that's for sure in our church is change. The one thing is for sure is that when you come on Sunday morning, you don't know what has been changed. And so it is a culture of change, and we try not to do it kicking and screaming, but actually embrace it as we see it coming and make a big deal out of it and enjoy it. Everything from our leadership styles. I know Brother Tom had to actually change leadership styles 3 times that we saw markedly in order to take the congregation to the next step. I know Pastor Irwin has already changed leadership styles. We've changed membership requirements. We're very much more upfront about what is expected and what you can expect from us and what you give to the body. We've changed everything from killing programs to whatever. The other thing is infusing values. We in the development of the environment, we try to infuse the values at every level. We do that by who leads. We do that by reinforcing through annual events some of the main values in our congregation. A number of years ago, we started a Sunday once a year called the Day of the Congregation. And it's a time that's kind of like the State of the Union message, and it's a big celebration, but it's where we actually see through ministries, are we on target with our goals and objectives, because we begin to look at what's happened the last year and what's getting ready to happen the next year. Once a year, we do what we call, it's a Global Congress on World Evangelization, and that is a big deal in our congregation, but it's annual. And to show you how the values are infused, it's required as one of our 3 leadership days, one of our 3 leadership times per year. We do an annual leadership. This is all equipping, but it's we do 1 annual retreat a year and then 2 weekends, and this is one of them. And my paper just flew away. Sorry about that. I think that was all. I would say another thing is we have 2-year goals that are based on our overall objectives of the congregation. So every 2 years, we have 3 or 4 or 5 goals that we're specifically working on so that we're not trying to do everything at once, but just take it a step at a time. Another thing that is reinforced and a way of infusing values is we really want covenant relationships and long-term relationships, and so through small groups and other things, that is there. Second thing that we are really about is the creation of channels very intentionally. Well, it's kind of embarrassing, but I actually had them all in order and I can't seem to locate it. Here we go. The creation of channels in the context of relationships. We want to create channels for people's faith, for their growth, for mission, and for their passions. And so, this is a real deliberate thing. And so, for people's faith, we create new things, we create more, and we go further with different kinds of channels so that people are always moving. Movement is the value in our congregation. But as faith awakens in them, we want to make sure that there's a channel for every person's faith, no matter what it is. We want to make sure that there's a channel for their growth through relationships, through classes, through risk kinds of ministries, through all sorts of things. In mission, we create channels for short-term trips. We do a number of short-term trips a year. For most people in our congregation, they have never had another person, especially another person of another ethnic group, in their home. And most of them have very tiny homes and would be embarrassed. But through hospitality, there is so much growth in terms of not only vision for the world, but just vision for their life. And through, again, the prayer that they enter into and praying for our overseas workers and different learning experiences. The other thing is their passions. We want to make sure that whatever God is awakening in them, and most of their passions come out of something that they've experienced or that they've gone through. I'm just going to give one example. Nancy Ingle was a socialite from Seattle area. Had been addicted to drugs and alcohol since she was a young teenager, and ended up in jails and living with men that were part of the mafia and all kinds of things. Ended up in L.A. But an old friend who was a part of our congregation, she called Karen when she was really at the pit. Through just simple sharing, and eventually Nancy came to Christ. But it was out of her background that God awakened the passion to see others really transformed also and not have to be addicted. And so out of that, she began our early stages of our Clean and Sober. That has grown to our whole Freedom Ministries now, where people are just totally getting set free. But really, we had had it on our goals and objectives for years, but it was we never had anyone with a passion. And so what we try to listen for is what God is awakening in people, and to where we can tell when it's time then to actually create it, because that's when we need to equip them. So we create the channels. We create channels for individuals. And what we have found is this whole issue of believing, belonging, becoming. That's how we kind of summarize things. And believing is faith. Because the question this generation is asking, is there anyone I can trust in? And this has to do with meaning. They're searching for meaning. And so this whole issue of believing is, we want to make sure that they have channels open, that they can find the one to trust in. We want to make sure their channels open for belonging, because love is something. Everyone is searching for community in this post-community era. And because they're asking the basic question, is there anyone who really cares? And then hope. They're asking the questions, is there anyone, is there anything worth living for? And so they're searching for a future. And so we want to make sure that for individuals, they find these channels of believing, belonging, and becoming, so that it answers the deepest needs of their own spirit. We also try to create the channels for groups and teams. What we find is, again, covenant relationships, if they're on teams and in groups, the synergy that creates the new things, and then also it's what leads to effectiveness. Because so much happens in our congregation around our small groups, let me just digress here just a moment to show you what this would look like in terms of our groups. Our life group's purpose, everyone, as I mentioned, has to be in a life group. This is the way that there's accountability for their life. This is the way there's care, and this is the way they actually grow in terms of their ministry skills, and this is the main place they're actually equipped. And so our purpose here is to reach people by providing a community of love and accountability for two things. One, the thing that we want to make sure that is happening in their life is that they have a personally transforming life under the powerful hand of our Lord. And the second thing we want to make sure of is that they have a growing evangelistic lifestyle, that our witness together and individually is authentic and powerful. And so this is the kind of team that they're on. These are the kinds of groups that that they belong to. Okay. Also, we try to create the channels for reproduction. And that happens a lot in the life group. But it happens in every area. So there has to be a channel that no matter what you're doing in terms of ministry, in terms of your group life, and individually, that there's reproduction. And we're going to go into this a little bit more in just a moment. The third thing that we're looking at is, besides the creation of channels, is the equipping centers. And this has most to do with what we're going to talk about this afternoon. The equipping centers are really for their work of ministry in this generation. There was a number of years ago when I was working with youth before I moved to L.A., and I remember the day that I had talked a bunch of youth into taking these parts on a program on a Sunday morning. And we were supposed to have a solo. There wasn't anyone in our youth group that could sing, but this poor guy finally said he would do it. And as he sang and everybody began to duck their heads, I said, God, there has got to be a better way. It was that week in a quiet time that I ran across the passage that says that he gave some as apostles and some as prophets, some as evangelists and some as pastors and teachers for the equipping of the saints for their work of service to the building up of the body of Christ. And I realized at that point that my role was an entirely different role. It was not a role to get people and these youth to come and help me put on a program or to help me in my ministry. But mine was truly an equipping role, and that changed everything for me because I began to look at things differently. And I concluded that if that was my role, then that everything God wanted done, he had put within the gifts and abilities of the people there. And so instead of having programs, we began to look and see who God had put around there. And once we could see who he'd put there and what kind of gifts were there, then we began to just simply mobilize it and equip it to happen. And things began to take on an entirely different kind of perspective at that point. Everything became different, actually. And so it's the equipping for their work of ministry in this particular generation. The Bible tells us that David served the purposes of God in his own generation, and then he laid down with his fathers and slept. It is this generation that we are to equip people for. And I think that that's one of the things that as we look at what we need to do in terms of equipping, that we simply began to think a different direction and a different way. Because we have a challenge before us. And in this generation, I just want to give you some overall frameworks from which we think. One is the church must be prophetic, recommit ourselves to pay the price of a biblical worldview, to be who we are and are distinctive in the world, integrity more critical than ever. And so when we're equipping people, we must understand that what we're equipping them for is to be prophetic in this generation, to have a biblical worldview. That's one of the things we want. We must have an apologetic, not just something that's in our head and in a book, but we must have an apologetic that prepares people for a hostile world, to be a minority, because that is the future, is a hostile world. David Watson, one of the English theologians, made a statement in one of his books that has always struck me. He said that the war of this next century would be between Islam, communism, and third world Christianity. He wrote this before communism had fell, but the point is well made. He said it's going to be between Islam, communism, and third world Christianity because Western Christianity is simply too weak and ineffective to have anything significant to contribute to the cause. And I would say, looking at things, we have compromised so much as a church. And in the light of tolerance and political correctness and things like that. And so over and over, the polls show little difference between Christians and others. And the scripture loves people, and yet it confronts culture. And so when we're equipping people and mobilizing them, we have to understand that they need to be prophetic. They have to have an apologetic that answers this generation's needs. An apologetic that answers the ecology issues, the racism, the family issues, the bitterness, safety issues, property issues, partnerships, so many things that are part of this particular generation's challenge. And so we have tried to build some new models of ministry, being effective in E2 and E3 evangelism as well as E1. In other words, many people, many Christians cannot even lead someone to Christ.